Our fourth case for this morning is Thomas Socha against, we have a new warden, right, Gary Bowden, 12-15-98. And we'll hear from Ms. Blyce.
Morning. May it please the Court. Rachel Blyce on behalf of Thomas R. Socha. Mr. Socha filed his pro se habeas petition before the deadline set by a district court judge. Yet the state continues to insist that his petition was untimely despite the district judge's deadline. The district court erred in dismissing Mr. Socha's petition as untimely for at least three reasons. First, Socha's July 15, 2008 extension motion could be viewed as his timely yet incomplete habeas petition that he was later allowed to correct and file a complete petition. Second, Judge Randa did not accord the appropriate deference to Judge Stadtmuller's extension order and should not have disregarded it because it was the law of the case at that point. And third, under the total circumstances of this case, the AEDPA deadline should be equitably tolled.
So I wonder, for me, if you could focus first on the third of those points, the equitable estoppel, equitable tolling. I know you've dropped equitable estoppel argument. I take it that's a kind of a totality of the circumstances argument, but maybe you could elaborate.
Yes, there are a number of circumstances in this case that lead to the conclusion that the deadline should be equitably tolled. Mr. Socha's pro se status, his abandonment, effective abandonment by his appellate counsel, shortly after the Wisconsin Supreme Court denied his petition for review, Mr. Socha asked his attorney to hold on to his case file. Just a couple of months later, he asked for the case file so that he could begin to prepare his further methods of review, and yet it took 9 months before he was finally able to obtain that file on June 6, 2008, just 40 days before the deadline.
How many times did he contact counsel and seek the file or have a attempt to communicate about the file?
It was about a half a dozen times. He began in September of 2008. He asked his attorney to return the file to him, which was against his previous instruction that he hang on to the file, but he did ask that it be returned to him. He did wait a couple of months until February of 2008, in which he asked the attorney again to return the file to him, and then he asked pretty much on a monthly basis until he needed to contact the attorney manager at the public defender's office.
Mr. Lund, right?
That is correct. Before he was finally given his file by Mr. Lund.
Well, actually, a couple months, maybe three, of the delay were attributable to his sister, apparently, who was to be the intermediary to go pick up the file, and she never did.
That is correct. Mr. Summers had indicated that Ms. Putnam, Mr. Socha's sister, could go pick up the file at his home. And so, it's reasonable for Ms. Putnam not to want to have gone to the home of a man that she did not know to pick up the case file. And Mr. Socha, after that time, had asked that it be sent to him in the prison where he was being housed. And again, he had to resort to the method of contacting the public defender's office in order to obtain the case file, which he then received just 40 days before the deadline. And courts in other jurisdictions have held that 44 days is not a sufficient time after receiving a case file for a pro se petitioner to get his petition on file.
Although in this case, his claims are identical to the claims that were litigated through the Wisconsin court, so it didn't take much to put together an adequate petition within that time frame. I think that was the import of Judge Randa's decision on equitable tolling. He also said something about the impediments as well, but in terms of what it actually took to draft a petition, there wasn't much to it beyond that which was already included in the state litigation.
That is correct, that his claims are pretty much mirror his state court claims, but this court has said that it is the duty of a petitioner in the first instance to research his claims before getting them on file. And Mr. Socha, in addition to not obtaining his case file right away, had difficulty accessing the library. He was in the segregation unit when
So which kind of he's referred to as being an ADSEG, which I thought meant, it could mean administrative segregation. Was he in administrative or disciplinary segregation?
That's not clear, but ADSEG does refer to administrative segregation. It's unclear whether he was there for disciplinary reasons. They do have a library in the segregation unit where he was, but as I understand it, there were only two computer terminals that was that were available among 250 inmates, and so an inmate with an approaching deadline was accorded priority access.
In the segregation area?
Yes.
At 250 in segregation?
As I believe that the computer terminals that Mr. Socha had access to were ones that he would have to share with 250 inmates. And to obtain priority access to those, he would have to have a court order with a deadline. And he did not have that until he had Judge Stadtmuller's extension order. And the record does reflect that after he had that order in hand, he was able to visit the library in his unit on an increasingly frequent basis. If I could turn back to my first point, that Mr. Socha's July 15th motion could be viewed as his incomplete yet timely petition.
Now, Judge Randa thought, though, that without grounds at all or a request for relief, that it really couldn't be. So maybe you should explain why that's wrong.
Well, under the cases that this court has decided in the notice of appeal context, when a filing evinces an intent to file a notice of appeal, this court has said that it can suffice as the notice of appeal. We would argue that that standard should translate to the habeas context, given the duty that the clerk and the courts have to review an initial filing from a habeas petitioner.
And I have a random question for you. Of course, it could happen in cases that somebody would be raising, let's say, for the sake of argument, six claims before the state courts, but two of those claims might pertain to state law. And so you really shouldn't throw all six of them into a 2254 petition because those are not to address questions of state law. In Mr. Socha's case, were all of his claims in the Wisconsin courts federal claims, or did he have some state law claims too?
I do believe that they would all qualify as federal claims under Brady and Strickland and some newly discovered evidence that would overturn his conviction.
Okay.
In fact, the habeas rules do allow a clerk to accept a petition for filing and then allow a judge to permit a habeas petitioner to complete his filing where the filing is incomplete. And we've cited half a dozen cases in our brief in which district courts have done just that. A petitioner files, it's incomplete, and in a couple of the instances, there were no factual basis or legal basis for the claims, and yet in any event, the court allowed the petitioner to file a later complete petition. That's essentially what Judge Stadtmuller did in this case. He accepted the extension motion and said, well, you can file a complete petition by a date certain. And that's what Mr. Socha did. He filed his petition within the time frame set by
Judge
Stadtmuller.
About a month early, actually, right?
That is correct. In addition, Judge Stadtmuller's order should be viewed as the law of the case. He had already exercised his discretion to extend the habeas deadline for Mr. Socha. This court held that that was a valid exercise of Article III jurisdiction and remanded to Judge Randa to consider the case in light of this court's holding. But Judge Randa did not accord any deference to Judge Stadtmuller's prior ruling.
Well, we didn't tell Judge Randa, though, that he had to accept that debt. I mean, could have, I suppose, but the earlier opinion was more open-ended than that.
That is correct, but this court, the point of this court's opinion was to say that Judge Stadtmuller had the jurisdiction to enter that order.
Except the law of the case doctrine doesn't apply to ex parte orders, and the state wasn't a party at this point and couldn't contest it. So, I mean, that kind of falls away. And law of the case applies where you've got adversity and actual people litigating on both sides.
Right. And there are a couple of instances where, and we cited them in our briefs, where the law of the case may apply ex parte. One of them is in the extension of deadlines in the bankruptcy context. We cited the Friends case, and in that case there was no evidence that the adverse party in that case was provided with any notice of the trustee's request to extend the deadline to file avoidance actions, and yet the court said that the bankruptcy court's order extending the deadline was to be accorded deference as the law of the case. And here, the state did receive a copy of Judge Stadtmuller's order immediately after it was entered, and yet the state did nothing after receiving that order and waited until Mr. Socha had filed his complete habeas petition. This court has held that in the cases where we have one judge making a discretionary ruling and a successor judge wanting to overturn that ruling, the successor judge must find that the previous ruling was clearly erroneous. Here, Judge Stadtmuller's ruling was not clearly erroneous. whether it be that he viewed the July 15th extension motion as an incomplete habeas petition, or whether he viewed the motion as having stated sufficient grounds for equitable tolling, Judge Stadtmuller had already made the discretionary decision to allow Mr. Socha to file a complete petition by a date certain. Judge Randa did not find that anything was wrong with that order or that it was clearly erroneous for any reason. And in fact, he didn't even refer to that order in deciding to dismiss Mr. Socha's petition for a second time. And if the court has no further questions, I will reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
That would be fine. Thank you. Mr. O'Brien.
May it please the court. The respondent believes that Judge Randa was correct in determining in his June 15, 2011 dismissal that the extension motion filed one day before the statute of limitations was about to run was not the equivalent of a habeas petition because it did not satisfy the core requirements of Rule 2C, which are to state constitutional claims and facts in support thereof. We further argue that Judge Randa did not abuse his discretion in refusing to apply the doctrine of equitable tolling to the petition that was finally filed in November of 2009, 4 months after the statute had run, because, as required by Holland v. Florida, Lawrence v. Florida, Pace v. DiGiulio, and numerous cases of this court, Mr. Socha bore the burden of proving extraordinary circumstances outside of his control and through no fault of his own prevented timely filing, and that he was diligently pursuing his claims despite any obstacles that he might have encountered while doing so.
So that's where I would like to begin our discussion, because even if Judge Randa's assessment of the initial request to Judge Stadtmuller, at a minimum, was not an abuse of discretion, I am having trouble correlating Judge Randa's discussion of what's going on with the record, because in the record we see Mr. Socha trying very hard to get the file in his case, and I'm concerned about a rule of law that makes the file so unimportant. You know, we have such strict rules for habeas corpus, and we don't want prisoners just throwing the whole kitchen sink in every time. And a rule, according to the way Judge Randa did this, would certainly encourage just a kitchen sink repetition of whatever was in the state court action, state law, federal law, in between anything, good, bad, or indifferent. So he does seem quite diligent, and this is not a Bowles against Russell situation. I can't separate my assessment of Mr. Socha's timing from the fact of Judge Stadtmuller's order. Not saying it's law of the case, not saying that it's the equivalent of a habeas petition, but here is a pro se man who is told by a federal district court judge, you have until a certain date. And I think when one thinks of the totality for equitable tolling, that fact cannot be set aside.
Well, it cannot be set aside, but again, he was told.
But you are setting it aside. You think it doesn't count for anything.
Well, he was told after the statute had run.
But he files before the statute runs.
He is told after.
I mean, the court rules on the motion afterwards.
But Judge Stadtmuller.
And had Judge Stadtmuller denied the motion, he would have been out of luck. Nothing to rely on there.
But that's
not what happened. He's told by the court, you have until November. And he's still trying. He's got Mr. Wagner out there trying to find the record. I just don't see these facts assessed by Judge Randa.
Well, we cited to the court the Anderson versus Pennsylvania Attorney General Court case out of Third Circuit, which I think is almost directly on point, where it's the same sort of a thing where a judge issued an extension order, an extension of time, and he relied on that, but the court held that motion was not the habeas petition, and therefore you go look at the timing of the petition itself.
Well, first of all, it's a non-precedential opinion,
right.
But secondly, the holding is that it's not a petition. And I was saying, you know, I'll give you that for right now. Let's assume that since he fails to specify grounds or relief requested, it, you know, you're right about that. But I still don't see why this non-presidential thing from the Third Circuit precludes our assessment of the totality of the circumstances here.
Well, first of all, you do have to. We are reviewing it under an abuse of discretion standard of review. We have to understand that.
And well, you need to consider all the basics. I mean, if Judge Randa had taken more of these facts into account, I think I might. You know, I mean, I
and yet
would listen to what he had to say.
He developed a detailed factual record, and I
but
think we cannot.
He doesn't give Socha any credit for the six times or so that he tries to contact his lawyer. He does.
Well, I think it has to be kept in mind that Socha could have had his file from day one, and he was the one who told his lawyer to keep it while he waited the year for the Innocence Project.
But he doesn't wait a year. He writes repeatedly during the year for the file. He realizes pretty soon. And he tries this, as Judge Sykes mentioned, he tries this action with the sister, but it's long before the year is up and he hears from the Wisconsin Innocence Project. He's trying to get the file.
He's
and this irresponsible lawyer is not answering his mail.
And then he does, first of all, it's pretty clear that it was available to his sister in April, and in one of his writings he says for some reason she won't pick it up.
Because she told him to go to the guy's house, but then there's like later contact. There's a lot of contact.
But be that as it may, he receives the file almost 6 weeks before the filing deadline. And as we see from his petition that was filed in November, 4 months after the statute of limitations, these are claims that were in his attorney's state appellate briefs.
But that's an ex post determination. I mean, I wish habeas petitioners were more selective about the kinds of claims they bring forward, and certainly would relieve the burden on the state as well if they were more selective. So if you want a rule that they shouldn't be, I would say be careful what you wish for.
But here's another point. I mean, he was in the process of also pursuing a 97406 claim while in prison. So he had some materials at his disposal. It's not entirely clear what he had with him until his file arrived in June. But even assuming he had nothing, he had 6 weeks to put together claims. And
he says the file was horribly disorganized. You don't have anything to counter that, I assume.
Well, I don't know how you could prove that other than that I assume the prison officials went through it to make sure that, you know, for security reasons. The fact of the matter is...
Do you know if he was in administrative or disciplinary segregation?
It is my belief it was disciplinary because there were violations listed for his segregation status, but I'm not 100% certain about that.
Even though it's called ADSEG in the record.
Yeah, I'm not 100% certain about that.
Is a little fuzzy, you know, I guess.
But, he's pursuing his claims, but he's making miscalculations along the way. He's deciding not to have his file at first, and then several months later he requests it. Then he eventually gets his file with almost six weeks.
But what do we do with it? Well, we have two big facts here. We have the lawyer not responding, which I don't think is within his control, and we have Judge Stadmuller's order. Don't you think that takes us out of the normal run of cases? Especially Judge Stadmuller's order, but also the lawyer not responding.
Well, I just think that you are taking a grave risk by not filing even a skeletal Reince v. Weber type of a petition.
And maybe so, but the fact is, as I'm saying, I think if Judge Stadmuller, after considering this motion, had made the determination Mr. Socha was not being diligent and had denied the requested extension, we would not be sitting here today. There would not be any shred of an argument, I think, that Mr. Socha would have. But he files the motion before the time expires. We all agreed a day, but it's before. If he'd filed the motion after the time expires, I think it would be a different case.
But I, you know, again, He filed a motion the day before time expired.
Yeah, before. I know lots of lawyers could do that, too.
He assumed the risk that the district judge would grant it
and
within that 24 hours.
And the district judge does grant it, though. He rolls the dice and he wins.
Well,
the district judge grants it, and then he's told, oh, we were just kidding. It's actually too late.
But I think he'd be in a far better position if the district judge had granted it within that 24-hour period.
Then
he files
so.
4 months later. And I think that's where the Prieto case comes in, the Quarterman case out of Fifth Circuit, where the motion to extend the time is filed and granted before. This court's decision in the Janssen case, Janssen v. Pugh, is a situation where district court granted what the district court allowed an untimely filing, but the petitioner was not diligent in filing. And this court said despite...
That's why I'm thinking of this in terms of equitable tolling, because I don't think the district judge, Judge Stadtmuller, knew that anything he did after the deadline was a nullity, and that certainly is not what this court said in our first decision. And if that's the rule you're arguing for, then I think it takes us right back to equitable tolling. It's the kind of it's Holland against Florida as opposed to Bowles against Russell.
And again, there are two things here. Assuming we're in the equitable tolling realm here, he has the burden of proof, and it's an abuse of discretion standard for review. And Judge Randa took facts to supplement the state court record in the interrogatories and the answers there too. And sure, a different judge might interpret that record differently, but I don't think it's unreasonable for a judge like Judge Randa to say you weren't diligently pursuing your claim, even assuming a lot of what you said is true. You still had 40 days to get this in on time. And you really haven't provided a good explanation why you couldn't, especially when,
well,
it turns out, you're
no
repeating the same
library.
Claims. Pardon me?
No access to the library.
Well, no, he had access.
Well, not very much. And the state assumes, without support in the record, that he could have gotten priority access, but he says no, there's a dispute of fact on that.
Well, no. See, that's wrong. He had regular access in May, and then for whatever reasons he went less frequently in June and July. He claims that he needed a court order, but the only proof he had was this one document that he received in 2011.
But you
I think
have
it's
no
a
proof
119.
To the contrary. That's why I called it a disputed issue of fact. I'm not assuming that
right,
you're wrong. I'm just assuming that we don't know.
I mean, it's beyond belief to think that if he had given them the Wisconsin Supreme Court's denial of review, and obviously the people at the prison are conversant with the federal habeas, and if he had said, I have 1 year to do this, here's 2244D1, that they would have said, no, you're not getting priority access. And the fact that he had regular access in May proves that he was getting access. But regardless, he's repeating the long and short of it is all he really needed was the state court appeals decision and his attorney's briefs to file what he ended up filing 4 months after the statute. And I think it was reasonable for Judge Randa to say he did not diligently pursue those claims in hindsight, because despite the obstacles, as this court has said in Tucker v. Kingston and subsequent cases, despite the obstacles that he faced, that other prisoners faced, some of which are by his own doing, his misbehavior in prison, his decision not to hold on to his file, some of it by his sister's doing, not to go get the file, whatever, he still had 6 months, or 6 weeks, almost 6 weeks, to put together a habeas petition. We're not talking about a detailed fact-by-fact petition. We're talking about something that gives notice, something that satisfies Rule 2C1 and 2, telling the district judge, here are my claims and here are some facts that will support.
He could have done that without looking at the record, in other words.
Conceivably, and knowing
what
his decision was.
He'd have to memorize what the state
court
said.
Yeah.
There's no, see, the one thing that's missing is there's no claim by him that he had nothing in his cell.
that he had no file. But you're speculating here. We don't.
Well, but it's his burden of proof.
He says he needed his file, and he gets his file in a state of tremendous disarray six weeks or so, 40 days before the new deadline. Before the first deadline, I'm sorry.
And I don't think it's an abuse of discretion for Judge Aranda to hold him to that 40 days, to say, all right, despite all this, you still had time to come up with a petition.
I think you're asking for a rule that would encourage kitchen sink petitions. I really do.
Well, I think we get those as it is.
Also, why do you want more?
We ended up with a kitchen sink petition here.
Yeah.
4 months after the fact. So that's what we're going to be litigating anyways. Once this, if this goes back to the district court and we finally get off the ground with an answer.
Apart from anything else, this has nothing to do with the ultimate issue of deciding. How much time does he have to serve on his original sentence?
It's a life. I don't know when he's eligible for parole. I'm sorry.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Would he be eligible for parole on the second sentence? As he was convicted the second time, is he eligible for parole even though it says life?
I'm sorry?
Would he be eligible for parole if this second conviction stands?
And that I'm not prepared to answer that. I'm sorry. Let's just put it this way. In light of the nature of the crime that was committed, parole is probably a remote possibility in the near future, regardless.
Well, I know, but different states for different reasons have
different
rule.
I see.
All right, if you want to just wrap up quickly, Mr. O'Brien, that would be
again,
fine.
It's our position that Judge Aranda was legally correct in determining that the motion for extension of time that did not satisfy 2C was not the habeas petition, and as such, the petition he filed, it was not an abuse of discretion for Judge Aranda to conclude that he failed to prove that he was entitled to equitable tolling.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Ms. Fleiss?
Mr. Socha did take an incredible risk in filing his extension motion just a day before the deadline, but it was a risk that paid off. He got an order from a district court judge telling him that he had extra time to file his petition. And so when we're looking at the abuse of discretion here, we're looking at, did Judge Randa properly accord any deference to that order? Did he take it into account at all? And by not doing so, Judge Randa abused his discretion. So that's sort of the framework that we're looking at. The circumstances of this case do qualify for equitable tolling. Maybe on their own, each individual circumstance would not, but in the aggregate, they certainly do. Mr. Socha did not have his case file until just 40 days before the deadline. It was in disarray, and there's no evidence that it wasn't. And we don't even know if he was able to find the briefs that were filed in the state court in sufficient time to be able to copy them and file them by July 16th.
Was he allowed to keep the whole case file in his cell?
That I don't know. My understanding, maybe not. He had limited access to the library at that point. He didn't visit the library, but there's no records, as I understand it, of when he requested but may have been denied access to the library in July of 2008. All this combined with the fact that he was a pro se petitioner, he had submitted this application to the Wisconsin Innocent Project. That doesn't excuse the late filing, but he wasn't cognizant of all of the circumstances and wasn't aware that maybe that would not pan out for him. And finally, he had this extension order in hand, which was incredibly important. The Fifth Circuit in Demas versus Drecke, which is an unpublished case, confronted this exact same situation and held that it qualified for equitable tolling. In the Demas case, the petitioner filed, like Mr. Socha, a petition for extension or motion for extension of time. After the deadline, the district court judge gave him an order dismissing the petition on an incorrect calculation of the deadline and told him when the deadline that the district judge had calculated would expire. In fact, the district judge's calculation was incorrect. So when the petitioner filed by that deadline set by the district court judge, the state moved to dismiss as untimely, but the Fifth Circuit said that having that order in hand by a district court judge, though incorrect, was sufficient to toll the statute of limitations and allow for a timely filing.
But does that decision stand for the proposition that it's an abuse of discretion to go the other way? Or does it just endorse that as an appropriate exercise of discretion?
It endorses as an appropriate exercise of discretion to allow an order from a district court judge.
We're here in a little different posture that, you know, we look at what Judge Randa did as under a deferential standard of review. We'd have to say it's an abuse of discretion for him to come to the opposite conclusion.
Right, but Judge Randa's decision shouldn't be viewed in a vacuum. We have to view it as having Judge Stadtmuller's order in the meantime, and to look solely at Judge Randa's decision and Judge Randa's view of Socha's motion and later petition and the circumstances that he faced would be to completely ignore Judge Stadtmuller's order. And so we just shouldn't be ignoring an order from a district court judge who's already made a determination in his discretion that Socha should be allowed to file a late petition. And that order should be the law of the case. It should be something that this court and Judge Randa should take a look at and have that inform the view of the later proceedings in the case when we already have an order from a district court judge.
What kind of criminal record did Mr. Socha have? Lengthy, or was it extensive? Had he a lot of contact with prison officials, jail officials?
That I'm not sure, Your Honor.
You don't know if he'd been before Judge Randa before?
I do not know. Given the totality of the circumstances in this case, it does qualify for equitable tolling, and we'd ask that this court reverse Judge Randa's dismissal order. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And you were appointed by this court, were you not?
Yes.
We appreciate very much your assistance to your client, to the court. We, of course, appreciate the state's contribution as well. So thank you. We will take...